I really look at it like it's a dance. It's about the flow. There's no such thing as perfect or perfection in any moment. Like if you hold still, it's never perfect. But there is perfection in the movement, in the flow, and in the dance. And so I try to really tune into my heart and trust what it's telling me, like the times that I have to miss something with my kids or the times I have to miss something at work. You know, like your brain will never be able to decipher what's right and what's best and what's true for you. And no one else can tell you what's right or true or best.
This is the Entrepology Podcast, the podcast where we optimize the bodies, brains, and lifestyles of entrepreneurs, go-getters, and world-changing innovators.
Welcome to the Entrepology Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Megan Walker. As a naturopathic doctor and anthropologist, I optimize the health and performance of badass women working to change the world as entrepreneurs and go-getters. You know, people exactly like you. Your business, body, balance, and inner badass, these are the themes we are exploring. Before we jump into the interview, I want to invite you to join our free Facebook community, Legacy. If you want to be something amazing, you need to surround yourself with amazing people. The Legacy community is made up of badass women living, not leaving, but living our legacy every single day. We are leaders, parents, entrepreneurs, and innovators collectively committed to leaving the world better than we found it. My mission is to support the health and optimization of these badass superheroes, literally to places we never thought imaginable. If you are on a mission and get it that your health is the key to your unlimited potential, then join us. We are super awesome. You can find us on Facebook at www.facebook.com/groups/BE Legacy. See you there. So there are a few topics that I kind of get jazzed up around. And until today, I wasn't exactly sure how they were related. But the notion of conscious parenting and bringing a level of awareness to how I parent and the environment I can create for my children is something I get really excited about. On the other side of things, when I look at my own personal development and my clinical work, I'm deeply fascinated with this concept of biohacking. How do we push the limits of ourselves? What kind of technologies and techniques and foods and ideas can we bring to the table to further our performance as individuals and as entrepreneurs? Two different ideas, two different podcast topics until today. It was a real pleasure to have Pamela Gold on the Entrepology Podcast. And what I thought was going to start out as a conversation around conscious parenting, which is one of the programs that Pamela runs, the Peace Power Parenting Program, what it actually turned into was a fascinating conversation around balance, biohacking, and incorporating all of these pieces into our consciousness as parents and as leader entrepreneurs. Pam not only parents children and has developed a program in accordance with that, but she's also the owner of Hacked Gym, a biohacking gym in New York City. She is a recovering type A workaholic who has now said, as she self-describes, found peace and balance in her lifestyle. And I was deeply fascinated about how she did it and the techniques that she brings to the table in order to make it all happen. Part of it is her ability to simply exercise 40 minutes per week and be in the best shape of her life. She had me in a deeply curious state after sharing it, and I am so excited to be able to share her with you. It is my pleasure to introduce Pamela Gold. Pamela Gold, welcome to the Entrepology Podcast.
Thank you so much. It's such a pleasure to be here today.
Well, I'm excited to have you. And what's kind of cool about it is this is going to be the very first episode that we have fully recorded in our new podcast studio. So welcome. Woo-hoo. I know you're not here, but it's...
I'm there in spirit.
Exactly. I know you were just sharing with me that you're actually in New York City. So I'm in like complete dead other sensory deprivation from the world. I'm kind of hoping we get to hear some of the excitement from New York in the background.
But not too much.
On your side.
Just a touch. much.
Yeah. Well, I've really been looking forward to this interview. And as we were chatting about before we hit the recording devices, there's a lot of different places that we can go. And your journey and background is eclectic and interesting and completely relevant to this audience. So I'm wondering if maybe where we can start is by you sharing your story. How did you get to where you are right now? And then we're going to jump in on some really big topics.
Sure. So I grew up on a farm in upstate New York. So I was like literally a farm girl. My parents weren't farmers, but my grandparents were. So I grew up in a very rural environment, kind of small school, was always an overachiever. I was the youngest and I was the only girl kind of with my cousins and brother and neighbors. And so I was always trying to keep up, always trying to kind of prove my worth. And I definitely had a ferocity about me from a young age. I always just kind of wanted to be the best me I could be. And so that was the kind of spirit with which I kind of tackled everything. I was really, really good in school. School always came pretty easy to me. Was able to go to Yale University. I was the first person in 30 years from my hometown to get into any of the top schools. So I went to Yale, really had just no direction when I was at Yale, had a lot of fun when I was at Yale, but really didn't know what I wanted to do or what I wanted to be. And then right out of school, I became, I was the right hand to the chairman CEO of a restaurant company. And it grew really rapidly when I was there. I went from like 18 to kind of 110 locations. We took the company public. It was kind of like a real world MBA. So that was kind of like what kind of was the professional path, if you kind of look at it, like where I got my education. But my life story, a lot of the kind of more important juicy stuff, you know, my mom had cancer when I was a teenager. She had ovarian, had like a 5% chance to make it and did end up pulling through at the 11th hour. But as a young person, that was a pretty, you know, tough thing to try to process. And then when I was in kind of high school and college, my sweetheart, who I was with for 4 years, became a drug addict. So I had to kind of navigate all the emotions and fears and pain that went with that. So those were the kind of big challenges I had early on that really kind of put me on a spiritual path and kind of set me looking deeper than just the outside in achievement and measure of success, but kind of the inside out. How do I feel safe and trust life and love myself? You know, all that inward work started kind of when I was a teenager. And so both things were happening concurrently. And then I became a mom, which becoming a parent, I don't know about you, but it seemed like I kind of had life figured out and under control. And then I became a parent and then everything got really hard again. And so becoming a parent forced me to dig a little bit deeper and figure out some more stuff. And that's kind of what got me in the deepest place with my spiritual work and understanding kind of inner strength and inner peace and being really conscious in terms of the choices that I make, how I live my life. And that led me to write a book and then create a parenting course. And now I just most recently opened up a bricks and mortar gym in New York City. So I'm running a gym and I still have this parenting thing and I coach people holistically. So I do a lot of different stuff.
Well, and I now have a lot of different questions because I kind of get what you're talking about, but I want to unpack this for people because on one hand, you're like, I do all this holistic stuff. And then on the other hand, you say, I do all this stuff. And I can actually relate to that. I've got a lot of things on the go and I've got 3 children and I have lots of balls dropping all over the place, but can somehow maintain momentum going forward. And some semblance of balance, So I actually would really like to understand from you, what does that look like to have this busy life and this strongly contributing life and then still be able to approach it from a place of simplicity and holism? Like, what are you doing to make that happen?
What a beautiful question. You articulated that just so beautifully. So I just want to reflect that back. Just so gorgeous. So, you know, it's a messy dance. And I really...
That's a great way of putting it.
Yeah. I mean, I really look at it like it's a dance. It's about the flow. There's no such thing as perfect or perfection in any moment. Like if you hold still, it's never perfect, but there is perfection in the movement, in the flow, and in the dance. And so I try to really tune into my heart and trust what it's telling me, like the times that I have to miss something with my kids or the times I have to miss something at work. You know, like your brain will never be able to decipher what's right and what's best and what's true for you. And no one else can tell you what's right or true or best. And it really has to do with tuning into my heart and trusting that, and then being able to stand up for myself when I'm letting the people down that I love. Because I know as a parent, you know how many times your kids are really unhappy with you or your husband is really unhappy with you. And I know what's true for me, and I have to trust that and handle it all with as much love and grace as I can as I just keep moving.
Okay, so I want to break that apart for a second, because I know the question people are asking themselves, and it's something I've reconciled, and I really loved your answer there, but where you're like, well, I have to be true to me, and I know I'm going to let some of them down in the process. How do you do that and not label yourself as selfish? And I'm not projecting that, because I don't think you are, but I think we as women are like, ooh, we can't let them down, because what a selfish stance to take.
I know. And it's such a juicy, juicy question. And I'm so glad you asked it, because it's something I've done so much work around. And I continue to do work around every day. And I think if you follow me on Instagram, or if someone chooses to, I feel like there's probably a meme up there somewhere about, you know, understanding the difference between, you know, selfishness and self-care and self-respect. I think that's what I said, like selfishness and self-respect. And again, there's no clear line. And that's why it's a dance, because you just keep getting deeper and deeper into it, because people are going to tell you that you are selfish. And if you allowed yourself to take that personally and allow that label to hit you and allow the judgment, right? Like, because if you're in your head, it's pretty easy to judge that as selfish. It's a judgment. And I don't know how much work you've done around this too, but like,
oh, you know, the judgments. There's been work.
Yeah. The judgments are never of service, because the judgment is in time and space. It's a label, and it's never black and white. It's a cognitive distortion. So we have to just keep moving through that, going deeper, listening deeper. And the way that I reconcile it for myself is I ask myself, am I in a place of love right now? Am I loving them, and am I loving myself? And that is my litmus test. That's what keeps me kind of, that's my inner compass. Am I in a place of love? And if I'm in a place of love, if someone is saying that I'm selfish, I know that it's not true. Because I know that it's not true, because I'm loving all. I'm not only loving myself, I'm also loving them, and I can feel it, and I know it's true. And that's how I can kind of stand in my truth, even in the face of someone who I deeply care about, deeply respect, who sees it differently.
Yeah, and I love that way of positioning it and placing all those pieces. And I think there are so many different ways of showing love and of crafting an experience of parenting and for your kids. And there's something unique about having an entrepreneurial mother when you have children. And I think there's a unique opportunity to be able to demonstrate to your kids that careful balance and that careful dance. And I know that parenting and bringing consciousness to parenting is part of the programming that you offer. Can you talk a little bit more about your process with respect to addressing conscious parenting? Because I think this is something that many of us are deeply curious about. And I think a lot of us want to identify as conscious parents and feel somewhat fraudulent in that. And I will speak for myself, because I'm like, oh, it's so lovely to be an entrepreneurial mother. But here's the reality a lot of the time is that I will come home and I will have had a really busy day and hectic execution. And I come through the door and their glowing faces are there. And the first 10 minutes is great. And then someone knocks their plate on the floor or something else happens. And I'm way more reactive than I want to be. Or my expectations for them are the same expectations I had for my team all day long. And I have to reorient myself to the fact that they're 3, 5, and 7, right? So the behind the scenes and the truth on Instagram, at least my Instagram, are not always the same. And I want to call that because I think that's real for a lot of women. And I want new tools for this, sister. Like I want to be congruent and consistent.
Tools. And I joke with my clients or the people that go through the program, like the reason why I can share all of these tools is because I'm like in it with you. It's not that I'm like perfectly executing any of this. There is no perfect execution of any of this, but I know what I need to be practicing and I'm practicing it and I'm getting better and better at the practice. So like everything in life, it's about kind of living in the process and committing yourself to the process, to the practice. And like you said, have more and more tools and get better and better at using those tools. And then you just keep at it. And so for me, I break down Peace Power Parenting is the name of my program. And I break it down into kind of four steps. And each of them is kind of a do not pass go, do not collect $200 kind of thing. Because the first step is owning our own calm centeredness. So literally, don't pass go, don't collect $200, don't do anything else until you take that breath and you focus on being calm and centered, which obviously is hard. And I think a lot of your audience already recognizes like, well, yeah, like, but easier said than done. And so that's why the first part of Peace Power Parenting, there's a whole week devoted to practicing mindfulness and how do you practice this? How do you get better at acceptance? How do you get better at boundaries and understanding your core needs? Because so much of it, the root of our struggle around calm centeredness has to do with our own kind of relationship with ourself and interpersonal relationships with those that are closest to us. So, you know, understanding boundaries really helps us practice calm centeredness. So that's the first step, is really diving in and making kind of 100% commitment to continually leveling up and owning our calm centeredness. And in that too is, you know, understanding a lot of the cognitive distortions that come around that, where we tend to blame others and the things that we do to kind of defend ourselves, but just, you know, leveling up on all that. So that's the first step. The second step centers around deep listening and being non-judgmental, what we already kind of touched on. So how do we practice that? How do we understand what it means to be a deep listener, to take things in full context, to practice non-judgment, and to really start to see and hear and understand what our children's behavior is telling us? Because oftentimes what's on the surface, like if my son is screaming at me that he doesn't want chicken, I know it doesn't have anything to do with the chicken. But if I wasn't calm and centered in deep listening, I might be offended that, you know, I just made the chicken and now the kid isn't eating the freaking chicken. The second step is like, all right, what's really going on here? Because it's not about the chicken. So there's a whole week's worth of lessons around that practice. And then the third part is communicating loving kindness. So how do we really practice? And there's a lot of skills in here. I was involved in dialectic behavioral therapy for a few years. So I learned a lot of really practical behavioral therapy skills, like the GIVE skill, G-I-V-E, which stands for gentle, interested, validating, and easy. So we need to be communicating loving kindness with them in order to get them to be vulnerable with us, right? And at the end of the day, if we're going to try to teach them something, we need them to be listening and hearing us. So we have to learn how to get them into a place where they can listen to us. There's a great book, like How to Speak So Kids Will Listen or something like that. That's kind of the same vein. We need to be communicating loving kindness. And then the fourth step is discipline to empower. So how do we start to discipline, to impact their behavior in a way that empowers them? We want them to be learning and growing. We want to be understanding the difference between having expectations and having standards. Because if we have expectations and then they don't meet them, we're disappointed. If we have high standards and we're sure they can meet those high standards, that's a totally different vibe. So there's a lot of skills in that really that's the nuts and bolts. I think most parents want to kind of skip to week four and get the discipline to empower part. But the reality is we can't do that if we haven't gotten good enough at kind of working the first three steps.
Well, and I love that you use the language practice. And I'm probably interpreting it through an additional lens because I'm a clinician. And so even, you know, I literally go and I work with patients and we call it practice because there's a constant iteration and improvement and check-in and opportunity to improve. And it's, you don't start out with perfection. And certainly parenting is the same way. There are no perfect parents, and it is an evolution, and it is literally a practice. One thing I'm curious about in terms of, and either this is part of your methodology or just part of how you approach life as a parent, do you do anything consciously to transition from a busy day of work into your role as a parent? And Brendan Bouchard was the first one who brought this up for me. And I literally stop outside my house before I step into my space or I step out of my studio and back into our house and consciously transition myself into the role that I'm walking into. And that's made a huge difference for me. And I just didn't know if you approached it or had any techniques that you use that are similar.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. Alison Armstrong, are you familiar with her work? Oh, you will love her. She does great work with couples. And she was talking about how, especially when we're in our masculine, whether we're women or men, because men can be in their feminine and women can be in their masculine, it's when we're in our masculine, even more so, that we really do need this transition time. And it's interesting because for me, most of the days, you know, it's crazy, it's hectic. Most of the days, I'm actually the one picking up my kids from school. And so I'm actually arriving at school. And when I arrive to school, there's such a huge shift that happens. And it's funny because originally I wasn't aware of it. I wasn't doing it consciously, but I wore this device because I'm really into biohacking among other things. And I wore this device called the Leaf, and
oh my
it
gosh.
Monitors,
yes.
You know, the Leaf?
I use it. And I'm going to tell you my pickup from school story with it soon. Okay. Keep going. This is
cool.
Too funny.
Well, yeah, it's so funny. So I wasn't aware of it until one day I went to pick up, I was wearing my Leaf and I had a crazy day. So the Leaf all day was telling me how stressed I was. I was like, thanks. Yeah, I appreciate that. Even though consciously I was not stressed. The Leaf was great because it showed me how subconsciously I was very stressed. But anyway, I knew it worked because as soon as I got to school, my heart rate variability went through the roof. I instantly went to calm. And there was this real kind of biochemical transition that happened for me subconsciously that I was just there. And now I was with my kids and I was transitioning not consciously. And I'll share that because I actually don't do as much conscious transitioning. I think everybody's different in terms of how much they need that. I think there's a lot of personality traits and maybe genetic traits that go into it. And so I'm actually someone I think that does it without realizing, right? But my husband needs to do it and I need to consciously hold space for him to do it when he gets home. So it's interesting because I'm someone who I think I just naturally do pretty well in transitions subconsciously, but I know that for many, many people, that's not the case, that there needs to be a routine or a ritual or something to kind of hold space for that shift to take place.
So I had an opposite experience with my Leaf, and I'm going to share this with people. And it's also good timing because we're actually bringing Leafs into our practice so that
awesome.
All of our new patients will have 2 weeks with the Leaf so they can connect to their parasympathetic nervous system and heart rate variability. And we'll share that with our audience really soon. But so I had my Leaf, and what was interesting is my heart rate variability was really high all day long, and I was in a super calm state doing my work. And then about 15 minutes before I left to go and get my kids, it would go into what's called danger zone,
mm-hmm.
where it's just like, it's like nonstop vibrating. And I was like, oh, that's so interesting. Like maybe an email triggered me. And it went on for 3 days in a row before I realized, oh my gosh, my
that's
whole system mm-hmm. is getting stressed out as I go to get my kids. And I don't know how your kids are.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm. And mine are little. They were like 2, 4, and 6. And mm-hmm. so getting them was like, it was physically stressful. They were like running towards the road and one was going in one direction. And there was 3 of them all at once. And mm-hmm. I found that was way more triggering to me than being at work all day long, which, you know, brings up, I felt guilty about that for a while. And then I was like, no, I'm just going to do something about it. And that's where the concept of transitions became so important to me, because I don't want to yell at my kids all night. I want to listen to their day. I want to be totally present and on their level. So it was a cool tool.
Yeah. It's the thing. It's like, that's why I love we're talking about this, because it just goes to show, it's like, we're all so different, you know, and having some data to help aid us will then kind of like shine a light on what the opportunity is. And that's why information is so powerful, because it's just, you know, until you have that information, it's subconscious. If it were conscious, we would know.
Yes.
That's the whole point. So that's so cool. I love that story. That's so cool. Mine are older. Mine are 10 and 13 or 10 and 12. And pretty, you know, we're kind of in the flow of things. And so when I get them, it's like, it's because I'm usually worried about being late. That's more my like, because this phase when I was wearing the leaf was when I was starting to launch my gym. I didn't yet have a space. I was working on business plans and meeting with investors and all of that. And so there was a lot of like, you know, stress during the day. I wasn't like in the flow working with clients or anything like that. It was like, you know, one thing after another that it was new to me. And so it was like, you know, new. But my kids, once I got there, I was like, I made it. Okay. Now I'm in my comfort zone, because I know how to get them in the car and get the snack and get home. Like, that's the easy part of my day.
Totally. Different phases and different stresses. I'm so glad we brought up the leaf, because this creates this really perfect way to be able to enter a portion of the conversation where we can get into biohacking. Because I think this is, it's kind of awesome. And I think there's really nothing cooler than actually being able to legitimately have a conversation where we go from conscious parenting and a conversation around like loving thyself to, and let's delve into biohacking a little bit, specifically related to women. So can you share with people a little bit more about your gym and some of the cool technologies that you have available to people there?
Yeah. And I just to hold space, it is such a great transition, but it goes hand in hand, because it's all about optimization. Like, we want to be the best that we can be in all areas of our life. And so the gym is around kind of optimizing our bodies, you know, our fitness routine. I've got some equipment called the ARX that gives you the most efficient, effective strength training workout using computerized mechanical resistance. I've got a bike called the Carol that gives you the equivalent of a 45-minute jog in under 10 minutes. So those are the two pieces of physical fitness equipment that I use. And I work out less than 40 minutes a week, and I'm in the best shape of my life. So that's...
Stop,
that's
repeat kind of, that for me.
Yes, I know. I literally work out less than 40 minutes a week, and I've been using this protocol for about a year and a half now. I know it works, because I know the shape that I'm in. It's all data driven. I can see what my VO2 max is. I can go with a friend and go on an hour and a half run. I can do whatever. And I know that I'm in great shape. And I measure all my body, you know, stats, body composition, all of that. So I know that there is this amazing opportunity for all of us to make our workouts much, much more efficient and effective, and then we're putting a lot less wear and tear on our body and opening up a lot of time both for recovery and contributing in our life, however we want to contribute as a mom, as a business owner, writing a book, whatever it is we want to do to be of service, we have more time to do it.
And when is Hacked opening in Toronto?
There's a guy coming from Toronto in about a month, and he's a functional holistic doctor, and he's thinking about opening something in Toronto. So I'll put a pin in it. I'll let you know if he ends up doing it. But the technology is there, and more places are opening up with the technology. And then for me, once I decided I was going to do it, I was like, ooh, what other fun things can I have? And so I've got a lot of great recovery tech. I was just listening to something, experiencing something called the Huso, H-U-S-O. It's sound therapy. So there's tones that you listen to on headphones, but then there's also vibrational pads that you put on your wrists and ankles, and they vibrate at certain frequencies, and you can choose what program you want to listen to. I chose grounding. So I was like, oh, I'm going to go on a podcast. I'd like to be grounded before I do that. I tell you, it was divine. So I have that. I've got the Normatec, which is the air compression sleeves for your legs. I've got an IR sauna. I have near infrared light called the Juve that helps with our skin health, our tissue health, cellular health. Gives me energy. If I do the Juve before I do my strength training workout, I'll get about 10 to 15% more strength. It's all data. So you can see all the numbers as you do it. It's all, and then I track everything. I use an Oura ring now every day. I don't use the Leaf every day, just because, you know, the Leaf with the pads after a little while, you're like, all right, that was cool. But the Oura ring I wear all the time, and it tracks my HRV while I sleep. I don't know if you have an Oura ring yet, but I highly recommend that as your next next toy.
Well, we also just bought a new EEG brain scanner called the Wavi.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. So we work with entrepreneurs, and we're going to be able to offer baseline brain scanning so that we can start to actually track brain performance based on exercise, based on new supplement protocols. And so we're super excited about that too. So Q1 is going to be an exciting year for our audience on our side. And I'm excited that you have the Juve, because I'm actually looking at bringing one of those into our home as well. So there are so many neat tools, and then the ones that you have seen and that you use, what are some of your favorite portable devices? So you mentioned the Oura ring as being super cool, and I agree with you. What an incredible tool to be able to have that data. But things that people can have in their home, the Muse, the Halo, like what are some of your favorites that you
come across? So I love the Muse. I love Huso. There's something called the Mindscape. Have you ever seen that? It uses lights to basically stimulate certain brain states. It's super portable. My friend who brought it for me to use here, he takes it on the plane and he'll use it on the plane. That's super cool. The Nano V isn't like portable, but you can, I mean, it's expensive, but you can definitely have it in your home. That's what I try to use every day. That I see a real increase in my HRV when I use that. And I also just in the day to day, I experience much more flow state, a lot more synchronicities, a lot more just right place, right time, things going really smoothly, like thinking of the right answer exactly when I need to think of it, you know, a lot of inspiration, creativity. So the Nano V, if you haven't looked into that, I would definitely look into that as well.
Amazing. And what about the Halo? That's one I'd actually just keep looking at. I study Kung Fu, and I find that the forms are often difficult to remember for me. And I was like, oh, is this in a device? And for people who don't know, this is a really cool device that stimulates the motor cortex to make repetitive motions easier for your brain. So whether you use an instrument or golf or whatever it is that happens to be, I'm curious what your experience has been like with it, because I haven't tried it yet.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, my experience with it, to be completely honest, I haven't really been doing any new activities where I could kind of gauge how quickly I learned. So personally, because I've used it mainly on the ARX, and I was already using the ARX for like a year and a half before I started using the Halo Sport, I can't really honestly say that I personally have noticed a huge difference. However, I have a bunch of clients who will wear it before they go to jiu-jitsu, or wear it before they go to dance class, or one of my trainers actually wears it on the fine motor skill setting while he's learning like a really hard classical guitar piece. And he says he definitely notices a difference in how quickly he's able to learn the new fingering. So I definitely think it's legit. And then it's just a question of, okay, do you have an application for it? Like for me, I got it because like, look, it'll be cool for me to try. It's really cool. I'll let other people be able to try it. But it's not like I'm a professional athlete or trying to like learn difficult choreography or learn something new right now. So I'm not able to really kind of put it to the test the way that some of our clients have been able to.
And biohacking, so that is valuable to me. So may prioritize my next biohacking
toy. Yeah, just to think about it. Yeah.
But in the realm of biohacking, it's really easy to get caught up in like the latest and greatest gadget, but certainly from my experience, and I'm curious about yours, biohacking is really also about the lifestyle habits that we engage in. So what are some of your never miss biohacking habits that are just part of your regular and consistent routine?
Sure. So sleep, first of all, is like the holy grail to me. I will not compromise my sleep unless I have absolutely no choice. And whenever I do, I see such a huge difference in my performance. I see a difference in my body metrics. I see a difference in my mental performance, my physical performance. It really is just kind of the original and definitely kind of biggest biohack. And so many people, you know, get this limiting belief in their head. And I know so many people like this that are like, no, I don't need sleep. And they really believe that. And I promise you, if you look at any of the research, it's just absolutely not true. Like, we need to sleep. We need our REM. We need our deep sleep. And trying to optimize that is of paramount importance. And so that's one of the great things about the Oura Ring. It makes it really easy to hold myself accountable and then give me an opportunity to tweak some of the things that we have the opportunity to tweak, like the kind of light we're exposed to, or, you know, what time we stop eating, or, you know, what we engage in right before we go to bed, to see if we can increase the amount of deep sleep and REM that we get. So that's just, you know, just absolutely number one. I'm a big meditator. And even though things have gotten a little bit more hectic and it's harder for me to have my first thing in the morning, 30-minute block of time for myself, that is still, you know, my big number two. And then food is the third. It's like what you put in your body nutritionally, it's either medicine or poison. And so, you know, those big three are kind of the fundamentals. And then, of course, the fitness. And then that's what's so fun if you have something like the Oura Ring or the Whoop or the BioStrap, where you can be kind of monitoring your stats and see if you are recovered enough to have that tough workout, and then honor that and be like, no, you know, my body's fighting something off. I can tell by my stats. I'm going to take a recovery day today, and then I'm going to engage in some of the great recovery stuff that we have at Hacked.
And what are your favorite recovery things that people can do at home? Because recovery is something I talk about a lot. And I think we don't have sufficient reverence for recovery, just like with respect to sleep. But what are some of the things that you encourage people to do at home on their own turf?
Yeah, well, definitely. We've already talked about meditation and the muse, and anything that can help get us into our parasympathetic nervous system is definitely a huge part of recovery. On the physical side, I don't know if you've ever used the Hypervolt. It's one of those high-powered massagers. It's very quiet. It's incredibly effective. Having that is fabulous. Even something just like a foam roll, you know, it doesn't have to be high-tech. But anytime you can get a massage, you can get your partner to give you a massage, you know, that doesn't cost anything. You can get your partner to give you your massage. So it can be low tech.
Oh, that will cost me a lot.
Well, there you go. But it doesn't have to be high tech. You know, if it's possible to get an IR sauna in your home, I highly recommend that, because those things are absolutely divine. But even the Juve, I used that in my house before I moved it into Hacked. So there's a lot of options at a wide variety of price points. But just start to say, I need to prioritize this. And you can do things that are free, like meditate or do the self-massage or take showers, you know, hot showers and then a cold shower. Shower, alternate hot and cold showers. You'll sleep better, and it's so great for recovery.
Yeah, that's one of my favorite things that people can do, is just get into the cold and end on cold when you do those mm-hmm. hot and cold showers. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Pamela, how would you define health?
I define health being in balance enough that your body and your mind and your spirit can be just fully firing in love and highest functionality.
Our body is a series of interconnected systems. What is happening in one system puts pressure on another. We understand this intuitively, and yet the most powerful medical system in the world, Western medicine, continues to evaluate our health in individualized silos. We have assessments related to cardiovascular health, oncology, respirology, dermatology. We have individual silos of expertise. When we assess the body from a functional perspective in our practice, we want to understand not whether you are necessarily fine in all of these different systems, but whether or not they are functioning in an integrative manner in a way that moves you closer to optimal health. While there are lots of functional tests that we can do to be able to assess that, technology is enabling us to start to look at this thing on the basis of artificial intelligence through the aggregation of data. We do this in our practice using a tool called Living Matrix, and I want to make this assessment available to you. If you go to our new website, anthropologyperformancelabs.com, on the front page, you will see an opportunity for you to opt in into your personalized functional medicine quiz. Completing this questionnaire will take approximately 40 minutes of your time, and when you're finished, we're going to prompt you to have an opportunity to sit down from someone on our medical team to review your individualized results. We are all on big missions. We are all trying to change the world. It's no longer sufficient for our health to simply be fine. For us to achieve what we want to do as badass women with a vision for how we can help the world, we need to move our health to a place of optimal. And I invite all of you the opportunity to see how close to that line you really are. Go to anthropologyperformancelabs.com and do your quiz today. What a perfect place to transition to the second portion of the interview. And what I call these, as these are our KPIs or key performance indicators. So just like we have them in our business, I believe we have them in our health and lifestyle as well. So I've got a few quick rapid fire questions for you related to how you live your own life. And I think you've started to give us some insights already around that. Mm-hmm. First one, do you have a consistent evening routine? And if so, can you share it?
So I actually do not have a consistent evening routine just because the nature of my family is really inconsistent. My husband travels a lot. My kids are at the age where oftentimes they'll need me through bedtime and want to cuddle and fall asleep with them. So I would say it's consistently inconsistent. The one thing I'll say that is consistent is I definitely don't do screens in bed. I definitely make sure if I'm using my phone, it has the light blocker on. And I'm really vigilant about that. I'm vigilant about not eating anywhere near bedtime. I'm vigilant about drinking the right amount of water. And that's kind of the consistent thing. But being a parent with the nature of my families, other than that, everything's kind of whatever happens, happens.
I love it. Well, I used to ask everybody their morning routine, and I interviewed so many women, and there'd be this sort of dead silence, and they're like, my morning is crazy. Because you're getting kids ready, and you're at the door, and you're all over
I get up a half an hour earlier than everyone else. That's my time. That's what I do, because the evenings, like I said, my kids are at the age where if they want to talk to me and have me be, you know, in bed with them while they fall asleep, that's when a lot of the really good juicy stuff comes out, when there's an opportunity to really kind of be present for them and support them with the stuff that's bubbling up from their day. So the evenings, oftentimes I'll fall asleep with my kids and then I'll wake up and be like, oh, I gotta go brush my teeth.
Yeah, exactly. And that's real life. And that part is so important. Fiction or nonfiction? What are you reading right now?
Nonfiction.
Any great titles on your bedside?
So right now, I just finished, what's it called? The Lotus, Physicist and the Lotus. I forget what it's called because I just finished. When I read on the Kindle, I don't even look at the title. And it's one of those books that I just kept going back to, and I just finally finished it. But it's this dialogue between a physicist and a monk. And it's this beautiful convergence between kind of science and spirituality. So that was really good.
I like that. What is the one thing you're most consistent with respect to your health?
Meditation.
You knew that right off the bat. It's great.
Yeah.
I like that despite all the biohacking and all the toys and all the tools and all the things that you can do, it's really about centering and reconnecting to the tool you already have. So perfect. What is something totally badass about you that people would not otherwise know?
I mean, I don't think it's particularly badass, but I curse like a mother. I'm horrible in that regard. But I'm saying I'm a spiritual badass, and that I can talk about really deep spiritual truths while cursing like a motherfucker.
I love it. What do you do for fun or play?
Oh, I move. I dance. I'm silly. I'm on the floor. I move.
And
could be anything.
And play's so hard to find. It's like the ultimate biohack. So yeah. Well done. And finally, last question for you, entrepreneurism. Are we born this way, or do we learn to become entrepreneurs?
I think we can learn to become. I mean, I think that we definitely are born, you know, there's the gene, right? The warrior or the warrior gene. And I think that entrepreneurs naturally will, you know, be better suited if they have the warrior gene more than the warrior gene. But I do think that we can learn to be skillful with our fear, you know, learn to be skillful in our risk taking, which obviously is such a huge part of being an entrepreneur. So I definitely think you can learn it.
Amazing. Well, I know people are going to want to follow up with you, Pamela. Where can we find you and your gym and your conscious approaches to parenting? There is so much going on, but I love how in the end we kind of distilled it down. I can see the simplicity behind the scenes, despite some of the really incredible things you're putting out into the world.
Thanks. Well, my website, PamelaGold.com. You know, you can always find me there. And then the gym in New York City is Hacked, HACKD. So hackedfitness.com.
Fantastic. And we'll hook everyone up in our show notes with all of your respective links. Pamela, thank you again for your time.
Oh, thank you, Megan. You're wonderful.
If you enjoyed our conversation and would like to hear more, head on over to Stitcher or iTunes and subscribe to the Entrepology Podcast. We would also really appreciate a quick review. When people have their health, they can change the world. Let us keep you healthy and you go change the world.